because, like, you know, I'm learning better coping skills than I had when I was, like, 13, 14, and I'm opening up to people more, and I'm smiling more, and just, like, you know, learning to just be a better person.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. And welcome to another episode of Far Betterment, the podcast where we learn new things about old friends and old things about new friends. Today, I'm joined by Journey Medina. Journey is an incredibly inspiring person. She's an entertainer. She's a singer. But mostly, she's a very bright and intelligent person. I was lucky enough that she joined me for a little bit here on Far Betterment, and I am excited to share her story with you in another episode of Far Betterment. So without further ado, here's Journey Medina for Far Betterment. Hi, is this Journey?
Yes, this is she.
Hi, how are you doing? This is Andrew from Far Betterment.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. So I guess we can just jump right in. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and, you know, where you come from, where you're born, and I guess kind of what makes you tick?
I was born in Christiana Hospital in Christiana, Delaware. I live in Oxford, Pennsylvania, so I'm very, I live in a very close tri-state area, so Maryland is about 10 minutes away from where I live. Delaware is about 20, 30 minutes away from where I live. And I'm about 10 minutes away from Amish country. And myself, I am not Amish. It's just that I just need to clarify that since I live so close to to the area.
All right. Go ahead.
And then what makes me tick is just like movies and a lot of the entertainment stuff and a lot of animal companionship. Just a lot of that. It's a lot of like dog and horse stuff in my family.
Why don't you tell me about that a little bit?
So my father, when he grew up in Mexico, so I'm biracial. I would consider it multiracial because my mom is black and white. She just looks like she's fully black.
Okay.
And my dad's from Mexico, and my dad has a lot of exposure to the animals down there, and a lot of he had a horse somewhere in his family. You know, he had a horse, he had a donkey when he was younger. You know, my mom and her family had dogs, and my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, her father trained horses. My cousin Landon, he's 2 years younger than me, he has certifications to train not only canine dogs, but regular pets as well. My cousin in Mexico, so the cousin who can train dogs here in the States, he's my mother's nephew, and so my father's nephew Edgarin, he's a charro, so he performs on horseback. He doesn't do the competition that I know of. He just performs. And then my grandfather, so my maternal grandfather, the one that trained all the horses with me, he instilled that in me. So the Triple Crown horse races are very important. They're a very important part of my beliefs.
Okay, why don't you tell me about that? Do you guys like have a big a celebration? Do you guys all get together? What do you do with that when that comes around?
No, it's just more of like a connection. But to me, like if I had my own house one day, I'd have like a big party for each of the Triple Crown races. But for right now, it's just like, you know, watching it in my room and, you know, going over all the old horse movies, like the old Seabiscuit with Shirley Temple, who's one of my inspirations.
Like, what do you like so much about Shirley Temple? And actually, what do you like so much about horses? What it is about horses that, you know, you find so, you said you feel a connection. What do you feel? Go ahead. Sorry.
It's just like, you know, usually people have exposure to dogs and cats, and I've had that, but I mean, horses just seem majestic, and it's a, it's just something unexplainable. I can't really just get into it. And you know, there's always that one horse kid in school that can't let go of it, even if they don't own a horse themselves. It's just that, like, something that's just a deep connection that's unexplainable. So it's just, I just don't know where it comes from, really. I mean, like, yeah, I have, you know, people in my family who have exposure to horses. It's just that, like, with me, it's just, I don't know why it's so strong, even if I love, you know, music and entertainment
so
as much as I do with horses.
What kind of music and entertainment do you like?
I love a lot of Broadway.
Okay. Tell me about that.
A lot of Broadway. When I was little, I used to, you know, watch Barney and stuff, but from what my mother has told me, so when she was pregnant, she used to work at a retirement center. She was one of the kitchen staff, and one of her friends / colleagues would play soundtracks in the dining room where they worked at. So technically, I was, from the womb, I was born to perform.
So you really love performing.
Yeah, I love I love performing arts. You know, like presenting somebody's art in a gallery. You know, the movies. Like I said, Shirley Temple is a big inspiration for me. I love a whole bunch of Jack Nicholson stuff posted on my Instagram.
Why do you like Shirley Temple so much? What is it about her that draws you towards her?
When I was 8 years old, my mom introduced me to Shirley, and I just liked the way that she performed. You know. Just how young she was, it was more like she carried herself well. That's probably why I'm so drawn to her, because she carried herself well. She worked really hard. It's just, I liked her ethic, and she put a whole bunch of heart into her roles.
Is that something that that's important to you, work ethic?
Yeah.
Why? Why is work ethic, or would you say that's one of your most important qualities in a person?
Yeah, especially with the entertainment industry, work ethic is everything. Because if you don't put any heart into the project you're working on, it's not going to be well received. So, like, say somebody did a movie, but there's like no drive to it, the movie's not going to be well received.
Mm-hmm.
But say you do a movie like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Jack Nicholson and all the cast and crew put their hearts and souls into this movie. And now you see why it's such a classic movie and a classic book adaptation, because everybody put their heart and soul into this.
Is that so did your mom introduce you to all these people, or is that something you just naturally found on your own? I know you said Shirley Temple, your mom introduced you to, but what about Jack Nicholson?
Jack was just from, like, just seeing the gifs and memes on social media. And then one day I was like, do I want to watch Harry Potter or should I watch The Shining? But I chose The Shining over the first Harry Potter. It was like Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. I think that's what the movie's called.
Okay.
I'm not a big Harry Potter fan. My cousins in Mexico are, but like, I was like debating which movie to see, like to watch. One summer evening, and I was like, I'm going to watch The Shining. So then that's where I fell in love with Jack Nicholson, is with watching The Shining. But I didn't think it was cute, scary, because I already saw what happened, kind of, sort of stuff on Tumblr, but like, I didn't know all the stuff in between, and that's what made it a good movie, because it's like, I only saw bits and pieces, but when I saw the whole thing, I was like, this movie's amazing. I mean, not only is he cute, but he's like, he put a lot of work into this movie.
Is that your favorite, The Shining, or do you like another one?
I don't have favorites when it comes to Jack.
I like that answer.
Yeah. Jack, you can't have a favorite with Jack Nicholson. And if you do, it's like, you know, it's kind of like, you're kind of not thinking, but it's, not like that. It's like you can't really chain it down. So then you say, you know, this one has the best performance. But I mean, for me, it's just that, like, that he worked so hard in everything he did, because he was busting his butt ever since he was like 17, 18 when he left, you know, New Jersey, because he's he's for where he used to live in New Jersey is about 2 hours away from where I live. So.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah.
I didn't realize that. So what is it about the entertainment industry that has such a pull for you? It's what's so magnetic about it for you?
It's just the way that people tell their stories.
Mm-hmm.
That's just it. Every story is different. So like Marlon Brando, I haven't really seen any of his movies. I've seen The Missouri Breaks and I've seen Don Juan DeMarco, but I'll still use him. So Marlon Brando's work is different from Jack's work, and then Jack's work is different from Jim Carrey's work, and so on and so forth. I mean, like, okay, so you take this show, Supernatural. Supernatural has a lot of, you know, references, especially in the early seasons, to the X-Files, but I mean, no two episodes are really alike, and, you know, the characters aren't have their own differences, too. Like, Sam is different from Dean, and Dean is, you know, different from somebody else on the show or somebody similar on a different show. So, I mean, like it's just a lot of connection and just storytelling is what I like about it.
How would you tell your story differently? How would you stand out?
I mean, I don't want to do it on camera, but I would like to do it through a book.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd rather do it through a book. That way it makes me more comfortable for my own personal lives. But I mean, I would still like to act and do stuff for like fictional characters or, you know, get to portray somebody in real life or something like that.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about your story? You know, I'm interested to hear what makes you, you.
Well, I mean, my aunt named me after one of the greatest bands in the world.
Okay, that's where you get your name from. All right.
Yeah. It's just a really nice name.
It is. I agree.
Yeah. And then, so I just come from a little, like, tri-state area in Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania, where I live in Pennsylvania, like, we're an hour away from Philly. Like, I'm an hour away from Philly. Like I said, 20-30 minutes away from Delaware, 10 minutes away from Lancaster County and the state of Maryland, and then New York City is 2 hours away. So, I mean, like, if I want to really get into, like, the entertainment industry, I have to really go to New York or sometimes Baltimore or Philly, depending on where the work is at, you know, if I really wanted to do a big project. And then, you know, I was bullied as a kid because apparently in Amish country, it's weird to have a phobia of cattle. But when you're not exposed to big farm animals like that, it's going to be traumatizing. And it wasn't even in the States that it happened. I was in Mexico visiting family, and it wasn't even our family's cow. It was my aunt's neighbor's cow that had gotten loose from wherever it was tied to or confined in. So yeah, that's why I don't like cattle. But yeah, I was bullied because like I'm just a really nice person. I really don't like confrontation and just people kind of just walk all over me. But I'm still learning how to like assert myself in a healthy way.
Well, how do you deal with that? How being a nice person, you know, how do you, I don't know, stick up for yourself or deal with that kind of negative attention or, you know.
I just talk it out with somebody.
Okay.
I just talk it out with my mom or, you know, somebody that I can confide in, like, you know, a friend or my therapist or, you know, just talk it out. I like because it makes me think. But it gives me better critical thinking skills if I just talk it out with somebody. You know, it's like maybe they had a bad day and they're taking it out on me because, you know, something's not solved. But it's just like if I talk it out with somebody, it makes it a little more easier to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So do you find that kind of helps you get your feelings out, or do you try to internalize things a little bit and compartmentalize?
I do internalize things a little bit, but if I talk about it as quickly as possible, I won't internalize it as fast.
Okay.
Yeah, so just talking with somebody that I trust makes it a little more easier to get through
now
some stuff.
Is bullying something you've had to deal with your entire life, or, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In school.
What do you think it is about a bully that draws them to certain people or away from others?
Well, it's just that, like, you know, they want to find somebody who won't stick up for themselves or has a hard time sticking up for themselves and won't want to cause a scene.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that.
Or if they do cause a scene, it's going to make the other person look worse, like the person that their target look worse, which has happened a lot.
Okay.
In my life. But I'm learning to be assertive, and I'm learning, like, the difference between justifiable anger and righteous anger. I'm still learning the difference between that, because that's still hard. And plus, I'm the middle child in my house. Never mind my dad's kids who live in Mexico. Like, right, currently in my immediate family, it's my half-brother, so that's my brother from my mom with somebody else, and then my younger brother, who's my full brother.
Okay.
So, like, I'm the middle child. I'm the only girl in the house besides my mom, so it's kind of hard to, like, express anger in a healthy way, because you just feel ignored as the middle child.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, people still want to talk to you. They're like, you know, you're still learning how to just, like, learn to be a little bit more patient.
How do you think that shaped you as a person, being the middle child? Do you think that's made you, do you think maybe that plays a little bit into you wanting to be in the entertainment industry? Just, you know, maybe so you can stand out?
Yeah, because it gives me a voice, because sometimes I kind of feel ignored,
mm-hmm.
being the only one, being the only girl in the house and being the middle child. So it just makes it easier to express myself healthily, not kind of like what I'm doing now, whining and not.
No, I wouldn't say you're whining at all. I think you're.
Well, no, I mean, sometimes I whine because I don't like, you know, I don't really like to share things, and
that's
I always have to have people. Yeah, I have to have people ask to take my food, because, you know, it's rude if you don't, and it's just, people don't understand that. It's kind of like, you know, at least say, like, let me say yes or no to you having my food. And plus, culturally, it's kind of hard to, you know, it's kind of hard to get things across, especially with my dad. And sometimes when I'm in Mexico with my aunt, because, you know, a lot of the attention's on us, but then it's kind of like, I don't speak Spanish fluently, so it's hard to get across. And plus, with, I have Asperger's, so it's kind of hard to get across, especially with food, because, you know, I don't know how to say, you know, I can't have this because of this. It's kind of just, it's all over the place, but at least within the entertainment industry, I have more of a healthy way to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I'm not lost when it comes to the entertainment industry. But when it comes to, like, just normal everyday stuff, it's, I'm lost. And kind of lost in translation. But when it comes to, like I said, when it comes to the entertainment industry, like, I know how and when and where to express myself in a certain way.
Kind of because you're being told what to do and who to be, and you're creating a character, or just because there's a little bit of structure there?
There's a little bit of structure, but it's like, you're not being told what to do per se, but it's just more of like, you know, you used to do it this way by, you know, kind of throwing a tantrum and whatnot. But if you speak in a more grown up kind of way, you know, people will listen.
Do you find that you did mention a little bit that you feel like you kind of are invisible at times. Do you find that playing different characters, and I guess you kind of touched on this a little bit, but do you find it helps with the Asperger's a little bit? It kind of, I don't want to say it like eases it, but that
yeah, it does ease it a little, okay. But it kind of just it. Because like my ADHD / ADD will like kick in really hard. So if I have, you know, a positive structure like mm-hmm. acting, it'll take all the energy out instead of, you know, bothering my mom, bothering my brothers, or, you know, being loud in my room when I should be a little more courteous to the people who are living in the house.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So do you... Yeah. Get along well with your parents, or has this been kind
of... I get along well with my parents. It's just my brothers, because, you know, it's a generational thing. My older brother's 15 years older than me, and then my younger brother is 5 years younger than me.
Okay. So, yeah, that's quite a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely a generational gap there.
Yeah.
So, are you pretty close with your younger brother, then?
Yeah, I'm still close with everybody. It's just that, like, you know, it's for my siblings, it's more of a generational gap and distance, too.
Okay.
Because, like I said, because I have two other older siblings in Mexico, so these are my father's kids with somebody else.
How do you find that it's different from Mexico to here, to Pennsylvania? Like, what is that relationship like?
When I see them, it's just like, it feels like I should be closer with them. But mm-hmm. I know, you know, right now, it's just like, you know, I don't have any money on my own. It's just, it's heartbreaking when I have to leave because I don't get to see them very often. I see them around, you know, the winter holidays every 2 years. So it's like, well, I mean, I should say every other year. So then it's just kind of like, it's kind of heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's good to catch up with them because, you know, I always want to make sure that they're okay. And, you know, if my nieces are all right and, you know, just kind of just like to check in, I guess.
Go ahead.
Entirely sure. I'm just not entirely sure, but it's just yeah. like, I feel like it's a good way to, like, you know, keep in touch, mm-hmm. like make sure that they're all right and stuff.
So, and I don't mean to jump around here, but you said you had Asperger's. How yeah. old were you when you got that diagnosis?
I was 14, so I was a freshman.
Okay. That's a tough time to go through anything, really. How did you deal with that?
I didn't really know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. I'm still learning how to deal with it. Like, I like, you know, talking with fellow Asperger, not sufferers, but people who have it. I like talking with them, getting their experience, like, you know, hearing their story. And she's like, you know, I have a friend that I met when I was hospitalized last week that he understands, you know, food sensitivities and food sensory. It's like if we look at a certain thing that and it doesn't look appetizing to us, mm-hmm. it kind of just takes off like you know, we're not going to want it, especially because I have braces right now and I don't get them off until June. It makes it harder for me to eat. So, you know, if I see something that's unappealing, it's just like I'm looking at it through the texture and the colors, and I'm also thinking about how would this feel not only with braces but without. It's just kind of like trying to figure stuff out before I leave, kind of thing.
I see what you're saying. So just very, very cautious and
yeah,
you think things all the way through.
Yeah, it makes it easier if I, like, see it beforehand.
Do you want to explain Asperger's a little bit for those of the listeners that don't really know what it is?
It's a neurological disorder, but it doesn't mean that, you know, we're not capable of independent thinking. It's just we think in a different way. We think more on a factual kind of thing, mm-hmm. kind of way. You know, we kind of want, like, we kind of see it, some of us see it realistically and, like, you know, realistic, like, logically, and then some of us kind of see it emotionally. It's kind of some of us, you know, do both. I'm not sure if that's a good explanation, but that's what my explanation is. It's just like a lot of factual things that we take into account. And then we, some of us, like I said, we just, you know, go with the facts or, you know, see where it takes us and how we feel about it.
I see what you're saying. Do you think that that's, I don't know, what are the difficulties that you've found having Asperger's? Does it make your life, you know, harder, or do you think that things are maybe a little bit, I don't know, I don't want to say easier, obviously.
It really depends on, like, you know, on the person. For me, it's just a mutual kind of thing. It just really depends, because for me, it's like certain materials I won't wear just for because I don't like the way they feel or I don't like the way they look. And it's just, I won't wear it. You know, same with eating, the way that it looks, the way that it could possibly feel makes me cautious about purchasing it.
And is that with everything?
Well, not everything. Well, I mean, as far as like dolls go, because I like dolls. It's like I like looking at them, but like I like to buy the ones that are in my aesthetic. So like, there's a Shirley Temple doll at the doll shop I volunteer at. That just, and it's the actual antique with the little postcard and everything. And it's just like she. It's the kind of doll that I want. If she wasn't, even though she's porcelain, I still want her. But if she wasn't porcelain, she was more like, you know, the plastic American Girl dolls or the ones that you get like at Walmart or Target, she would be something that I would play with all the time, or like, you know, practice braiding so that I can, you know, do my own hair better, kind of like that. It's just a lot of like test driving in a way.
Okay. So a lot
That's
of
what I see it.
A lot of textures, a lot of would you say it's a lot of instinct? I mean, obviously you like to think things through, but if it seems like when it comes to eating or clothing or things that you enjoy, it has a lot to do with like instinct and texture.
Yeah, it's like instinct and like how it feels in a tactile kind of way.
Okay. Okay. And
then it also goes with aesthetic too. If it's like, if it's Beauty and the Beast, because that's one of my favorite, Disney princess movie. Like, you know, if it's, because I have sheets for Beauty and the Beast. It's like, if it's just something like simple and nothing over the top, that's fine. But like, it's kind of like, it depends on kind of the situation too. It's like, if I want something over the top, I'll get this. But if I want something simple, I want this. It's kind of like, yeah. A lot of decision making is kind of how I see Asperger's.
Okay.
And somebody else could have some different definitions, but from what I see it, it's just like a lot of decision making towards my sanity.
Okay. And do you feel that your parents have been, you know, pretty supportive as far as your decision making? They haven't made it, you know, difficult, or because I mean, you seem very self-aware. You seem like you know yourself really well, and you know what you like, and you know what you want and what you're into. And it seems like from my end anyway, just observationally, that your parents have been pretty supportive of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, culturally, when I'm at my Aunt Maria's house, it's kind of hard to get across because I don't eat red meat, not only from, well, cause people think, are you afraid of cows that much that you're not going to eat beef? It's like, no, that's not really a reason. It's just because I don't like the texture of beef or pork or steak. I just don't like the way that it kind of looks like chicken. And then especially when it's breaded, kind of the way that, you know, a certain dish of chicken is prepared. And if I bite into it and it doesn't taste like chicken, I'm just going to be kind of like, not upset, but just a little more like curious as to like how it got into the platter.
Okay, I see. I actually see exactly what you're saying. I can understand that.
Yeah, it happened once, and my dad's like, "Why didn't you eat it? It's still good. It's just that, like, the way it's hard to explain, especially in like Hispanic cultures. It's just like the way chicken tastes to me is just, I like it. The way beef or pork tastes to me is just, it just doesn't feel good.
I think you're doing a great job of explaining that to people, especially good. That don't understand. Yeah. Do you think that there's a negative viewpoint of Asperger's, especially to those who don't understand? And you don't have to answer this if you don't want, but I guess the reason I'm asking is because, you know, there have been certain situations in the past where Asperger's was a diagnosis for that person, and they went out and, you know, did something terrible. Maybe in society a little bit, they think that Asperger's is something to be feared or a red flag.
It shouldn't be feared. It should be explained through the point of view of mm-hmm. someone who has it or someone who supports, you know, like who actually is knowledgeable and isn't, you know, trying to like kind of like gain publicity
I agree.
From it. It's just that, like.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to say, you know, what do you want to say to those people? What would you like to tell them?
Like, I want them to talk to somebody who has it, because everybody who has Asperger's has a different story. Like, for me, like, it's just, you know, kind of, like, plain and simple. I know what I want. I know what I don't want. And it's just that, like, you know, if I have a little more time in advance to make my decision, it makes it a little easier. Mm-hmm. But if I don't have time, but I have, you know, enough information for me to just like, you know, at least try to understand it, then that's fine too. It's just that like, I like to have some information to it. So I don't just like go on just emotions alone.
So what would you like to help people with Asperger's? I know you said you're in some groups and things like that and therapy.
Yeah, some groups on Facebook. Well, I'm in some groups on Facebook, and I just like seeing people like kind of explain how their Asperger's is, you mm-hmm. know, because not every person, no two people with Asperger's are alike. And I just want to spread awareness. I mean, I just like having people know that, you know, with a lot of mental disabilities, you need to talk to somebody who has it. You can't just rely on the factual stuff and the mm-hmm. stuff that gets debunked and everything like that. Talk to somebody who has, you know, depression or anxiety. You know, talk to somebody who has it. It's just don't go through all the stuff that, you know, you have on like medical sites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. People should definitely seek out help from either somebody who knows or a professional. Or obviously, you're seeing a professional. Where do you feel like you've gotten the most benefit though, from a professional or from somebody who's also dealing with it?
Both.
Both.
I like the professional because then it's like then we can talk out what seems like a better coping skill for like, you know, the next, or like, you know, the next plan for something like, you know, getting a job or something like that. It benefits me professionally to have a structure, and then it benefits me talking to somebody else because they know what it's like and they know what, you know, they can give me some recommendations.
Is it difficult to deal with Asperger's and ADHD at the same time, or have you kind of gotten the hang of it by now?
I'm still learning how to get the hang of it, but mm-hmm. I mean, like, sometimes it's just like everything's going warp speed mm-hmm. and then it's just like it's hard to contain. But when you find that little hobby or like, you know, something to keep you occupied, so like today my brain is kind of going all out because it's the day before Easter and there was a lot of traffic at the little market that I like to go to. And it's kind of like my brain was kind of going overdrive. And I was trying to tell like all my, like the friends, like the ladies I volunteer with about, you know, like what it was like being hospitalized for the week. And then like, you know, trying to, you know, get back to what I was doing and, you know, some recommendations. And, okay. you know, get back. Yeah, getting back to learning how to make doll clothing so that I can work my way up to like making clothes for myself because I want to start cosplaying and stuff like that.
Okay.
So you know, make my own clothes because sometimes, you know, I want to make something that's personal to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, it's just, you know, just kind of like, I just kind of want everybody's, kind of like everybody's story so then I can take into account for myself.
Just kind of like making yourself out of other people's puzzle pieces.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, just making a checklist for myself in a way.
I like that. I think that's like very logical. But I guess that's what you're saying. You're a very logical person.
Yeah.
It's very practical too, which I can appreciate. I like practicality. As odd as that sounds.
So do I.
How did people around you react when you were diagnosed at 14? I mean, that's a difficult age to be living. I mean, that's a difficult age to go through, you know, period. Teenage years are, I remember mine. They were terrible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my mom and I were like, well, you know, my mom and my aunt, so it's my mom and her sisters who I turn to a lot. We're just more of like, you know, trying to give myself independence, but in a way that would be safe for me and I'm not jumping into things. Because sometimes I feel like I'm trapped and sometimes I kind of feel like a baby doll because, you know, I like to play with the dolls and stuff. It's just like I kind of feel like one of them sometimes, but then like in the end I see that they were right, but it's just like we just kind of see, it's kind of just like I said, a lot of test driving, see what works for me and what doesn't work for me. So like McDonald's does not work for me, but like the library or working with therapeutic horses would work better for me because it's not as demanding as McDonald's is. And plus the one that I worked at was privately owned, so then we had like a lot of customers asking if we had certain items on our menu that were either discontinued by corporate or that the stuff that's only available at corporate.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's been a challenge.
It's very difficult because you have a million different duties all at once, but then it's like if you're somebody like me, like I can't do three at a time. I have to do one or two.
When you were diagnosed, did you already kind of have a feeling, or you know, did it kind of click and you had like an aha moment where you're like, oh, it makes sense, or you had no clue?
I had no clue until I was 16.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because I didn't really get to see my paperwork at my IEP meetings. It was just more like, you know, making plans and stuff for high school and just like, you know.
So did your parents ever talk to you about that?
Not per se. It was more of like a thing that's like, okay, we know this is what, you know, kind of more like making game plans, just like not focusing on it too much, but just making game plans on what we should do and how we should do it.
So how did you find out then?
I looked at my paperwork.
Okay. And how'd you feel when you found out?
That's like, oh, it was that aha moment, but it was more like, you know, it's like nobody's really ever talked about it in my family. So then it was just more like curiosity and everything.
Okay. So were they pretty open to it once you found out on your own?
Yeah. Now we're just doing a lot of like experiments. So McDonald's was an experiment.
Okay.
And it didn't go too well, but I mean, at least we know it's just more of like, kind of like, child, she can do a job. It's just gotta be something that's more her speed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, I just from speaking to you and with you, I've have like a great appreciation for your practicality. Like that's a quality I've always really admired in people, is practicality and being logical. Cause I feel like I'm a really logical person, maybe too much maybe to a fault, some people might say. But you seem like you take every experience and learn from it and grow from it and become, you know, better. The next time, you know, and you just keep trying and you don't give up. And I really enjoy that about you. So I just wanted to get that out there.
Thank you.
And, you know, tell you, I really admire you.
Thanks.
So, did you, once you found out when you were 16, you know, how much do you think, I guess, going back to growing as a person, how much do you think you've grown from that point on? Was it easier for you to, learn about yourself?
It's still a little hard, especially because, like, you know, not everything can go, not everything's in depth. I kind of have to go through, like, different sources. Well, for me, it wasn't really in depth, but I still feel like I'm growing. It's just that right now we have to, like, kind of, like, take a step back, take a big, you know, deep breath and kind of just, like, go from there.
Okay.
A little slower than last time, but still, you know, enough to say, you know, I'm still making progress with myself.
Well, I mean, I think that's
amazing. Achieving independence. Yeah.
I think that's amazing. I mean, you're still very young. You're 20, 21, is that right?
I won't be 21 for a couple of weeks because it's the middle of April, so my birthday is June 4th. So, yeah, I'll be 21 in a couple of weeks.
Well, happy early birthday from all of us.
Thank you.
So you were talking to me about therapeutic horses. Is that something that you're looking to get into or have gotten into, and how's that helped you?
Looking into.
Okay. Okay. What about that is appealing to you? I know you already said you like enjoy horses and being around them. But what is it about them that
it's just the connection that the rider has with the horse.
Okay. Tell me about that. Because I think a lot of people out there don't really, and myself included, you know, I've been on horses as a kid, but not a lot. I don't have a lot of exposure to that. So I'd be really interested to hear about that some more.
Well, because I grew up watching, you know, like I said, there was the one Shirley Temple movie, The Story of Seabiscuit. I grew up reading Black Beauty from when I was in, like, second grade and just, you know, watching all the movies. And you know, Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron is not only a movie that I enjoy, it's one of my coping skills when I have a panic attack.
Okay.
From either, like, you know, being near cattle or hearing a balloon pop or, like, fireworks or something like that. So it's kind of, because I just like the way that it connects to me, because it's just very ambient. Because, like I said, I live about 10 minutes away from Lancaster County, and Lancaster County is where a lot of the Amish population is.
Yeah.
And hearing the buggies on the street every day, you know, it's just something in my, I can't explain it. It's just something in my soul. And then when I, like, watched The Adventures of the Black Stallion, because I read the book when I was younger, the first one with Alec and the Black, like, it's just a really, like, you can tell that if I had a horse, we'd have, like, a really deep connection, because it's just more like the horse can feel you and you can feel the horse, and, you know, it's just like, it's kind of like, it's indescribable, but at the same time, it's more like, it's just a connection you feel, but it's just an indescribable connection that it comes with it.
Do you have, like, a favorite memory that you could tell me about?
Horse camp.
Okay.
I used to go to riding camp, and it was fun.
What was your favorite part about that? What did you love so much about it?
I loved riding because it was my favorite part of the day. I mean, learning about the anatomy and learning how to, you know, drive carriages and stuff like that, that's fun and everything. But if I'm, like, you know, but once I'm on the horse, it feels, you know, I'll still be nervous because I haven't ridden in a while, but I mean, like, but once the horse and I understand each other, it feels like magic. And so, I like magic too.
So, okay, tell me about that.
So, like, magic I like magic in a like a kind of like a Disney sense. It's like, you know, like a feeling. Like
okay.
It's kind of like it's like a kind of just like a spark of inspiration or something. That's indescribable too, because it's just it's just a feeling of power.
What inspires you, and how do you find inspiration throughout the day?
Just like seeing little things, like kind of like the horse and buggies on the street, you know, people showing kindness to other people. Just that's the kind of stuff that I like, and that's the kind of magic I see, and people using their talents for good, and you know, like art. Like art is shown in a different way, and I kind of see science as an art, because you know the way that they create things is just really amazing, especially when they combine like regular science with an art project. Because then it just you can see everything break down. Mm-hmm. Kind of I just like magic. It's not in like, you know, like the Chris Angel kind of sense, but in like the Disney sense. There's like something something that's like indescribable, but you can feel it.
I like that. I wish more people looked at the world like that. Because I don't think they do enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really, I hope that people take that from your episode, that they should try a little harder to look at the world like that.
Yeah. Kind of be kinder to people, just like, you know, take a minute and just, you know, try to, I'm not really sure. Just take a minute, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Just enjoy things.
Yeah.
You know, and I think another thing that you said that I really liked was that you try to see things from other people's point of view, especially if you're upset or frustrated or angry. You don't like confrontation, and so you kind of try to see things from the other person.
Yeah.
That's another thing I think people should try a little harder to do and can learn from you. I think you've got that down.
Yeah. I'm still learning myself how to do it a little more, not ethically, but a little more, what's the word? Kind of just a little more healthier, not like butting in every couple of seconds, just more of like, you know, listening and just, you know, making sure that they're heard.
Yeah. And that's absolutely something I need to work on a little harder, you know? So I'm terrible at interrupting.
And, so am I.
Even though I don't mean to do it, you know, I
can't
help myself sometimes.
Do
you think that, or what's one thing you would like people to know about you that maybe you think isn't coming across, I don't know, maybe bluntly enough?
Well, to me, people say, you know, you walk into a room and you just light it up because you're honest, actual self. And then it's like, because, you know, being bullied for so long, it's like, I didn't think I was special. I was just thought, it's like, oh, she can sing. Oh, she likes movies and can quote TV shows and everything like that. Oh, she's a horse lover. But then it's like, people are like, you have a gift and you have magic. And then, you know, being worried about it, it's kind of like that versus like, for me, it's just, I have a story to tell just like everyone else. I'm not just like a bouncy, like child that like with ADHD bounced all over the place. I like Tigger. It's just that like, I just kind of want to get my story across, but kind of like, I'm here too. Not really sure if I answered your question, but it's just kind of like, you know, I have something important to share too. I'm just as capable as everyone else is.
Do you think that's the main thing you want to share, is that you're capable?
Yeah, I'm capable.
Yeah. I like that. I think that's a great message. And I think a lot of people maybe take that message for granted.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still learning how to, you know, sculpt it, but I know that I'm capable. It's just kind of like learning from, you know, 6 years ago, being in high school, you know, still learning how to just take people's negativity with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
I run a lot on emotion too, so it's kind of just like, it's just more like kind of just sculpting it, not falling prey to it anymore.
So would you say that change is a difficult thing for you to deal with, or is it something that you kind of invite and enjoy?
It depends on the situation.
Okay.
So like if it's a good kind of change, mm-hmm. like saying, like, you know, the way I'm decorating my room with my aunt, it's like I'm not a little kid anymore, and I can't just be in a white room that looks like a, you know, an 8-year-old had a, like, you know, a play date in it. It's got to look like something a 20-something-year-old can live in, you know, with shelves and everything put neatly in its place. But, like, that change can be, like, you know, somebody leaving or somebody dying or, you know, being uprooted, which, knock on wood, has not happened in a while. I mean, or happened at all. I mean, somebody has died, you know, my grandfather when I was 12 back in 2010, but then it's like, you know, not, that hasn't happened where it has affected the whole family a lot. But like bad change is just bad change is something that I have to, like, you know, work with somebody on. Good change is more like, it is just something that I welcome.
What would you say bad change has been for, and how did you deal with that?
So when I was first hospitalized, that was, to me, the hospitalization was a bad change because I was away from home, but I was getting the help that I needed. Same with this time, you know, last Tuesday. I didn't like, you know, the way that it was ran, but it was the help that I needed. And then the good change was, is that we're taking steps for my independence, and we're taking steps for, you know, just to have better coping skills and, you know, see what kind of medication that I should be on, you know, just like, you know, monitoring things, just kind of like keeping track.
So do you live on your own right now? Or you live with your parents, or how does that?
I live with my parents.
Okay.
But I want to, this one day, I kind of want to work my way to like a really nice house where I could have a horse or two, maybe like this specific breed of sheep. It's called, I can't say the breed. It's like Swedish or something. It's like Phallus black nose, because it looks like a yak, but it, you know, it's a sheep, so it's kind of like something that I could kind of like, you know, work with, because it's not a cow, it's not cattle, it's a sheep, so it's just kind of like, you know, something.
Okay.
It's a challenge for me, because like I said, like we have a lot of animal companionship in our family, because the one that didn't own, so my one aunt doesn't own cattle, but she has some sheep. So I've been around sheep for most of my life. So that's another animal that I could have. But I definitely want a dog, and thinking about getting a service dog, maybe a dog or two, maybe a horse or two, a sheep or two, maybe some ducks. Kind of, because I don't agree with like all the society things about motherhood and how like having like human children. I'd rather have animal children, because human children I'm not really around a lot, and when I am, I kind of feel overwhelmed. So it's kind of just like, that's the one thing I want, is like I can live in a nice house with nice acreage that I can afford, you know, and just have like, you know, some animals, and just, you know, just live healthfully.
I understand that. Yeah, I totally understand that. So what is it about kids that you don't... So you don't want children, is that right?
Yeah, I don't want human children. It's just I don't mind having cousins and mm-hmm. nieces and nephews and god kids. It's just more like, you know, for me, I just find it overwhelming because, like, okay. I said, I'm not with a lot of them because I have cousins in Mexico who are 2 decades younger than me, and I have cousins here, 2 cousins in the States who are months apart, and they're about to turn 6 or 7 this year, and, like, you know, they're not with me all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's just that, like, you know, I'm not really around small children all the time. And then, you know, my brother's at that age,
yeah,
you know, 15 years old. He thinks he's the boss, like he's the king and everything. But mm-hmm. yeah, no, it's just kind of like more of like just a feeling of overwhelmed. But when I'm around animals, it kind of just, it's more of a mutual kind of thing. Cause when I dog sit for my aunt, like I feel good. When I clean up my brother's tank, my brother's turtle's tank, I kind of feel worried because we have a small little box that he climbs out of. But when he's in a bigger box, I think I'll be a little calmer because then he's not going to, like, get out and, like, hurt himself.
So you think maybe kids are a little bit too much simulation for your sensory?
Yeah, human children are just like a lot to just be around, especially if you're not used to having them around. But animals mm-hmm. are a little less, even though they can't talk, but it's just a little less taxing for me.
Okay, that's understandable.
Yeah, that's
understandable. I mean, even... You know, I have 3 kids myself, and it's even, you know, can be, I don't want to say overwhelming, I guess, but, you know, it can be challenging at times.
Yeah, it can get to that point mm-hmm. where you can feel overwhelmed, but I mean, like, but for a lot of the time, it's just because I'm not near a lot of smaller children.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to go from not being... to all of a sudden being around them. So that's a difficult
but
transition.
Then when I'm at McDonald's or when I worked at McDonald's, I love seeing the kids, you know, get all excited about their little kitty cones and their Happy Meals. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, kids would be like, can I exchange this Happy Meal toy for this Happy Meal toy? I'm like, yeah. And I bring, like, you know, a couple over, see if they want, see what they want to choose from. And I just like the smiles on their faces. Or when I'm at a doll shop and they get, and the little girl, or the little boy gets the little doll or horse or little toy that they want, I like seeing their like the smiles too. It's just that, like, for myself, I'd rather it be from, like, the point of view of a customer or, like I said, the niece, nephew or something like that. That I don't mind. But having my own human children, it would just not be a healthy thing for me. But, like, I welcome the idea of pet parenting.
I like that. And I, you know, like I said, I really enjoy that you kind of know yourself that well, that you're so very sure in your decisions. I think a lot of us don't have that benefit. You know, we're kind of questioning ourselves all the time, and you know what you want. And I love that.
Yeah. I'm still questioning myself sometimes, but mm-hmm. I mean, like, but there's certain things, like I said, motherhood, you know, and being in the entertainment industry, like, you know, coping skills. It's like, I know what I want and I know what doesn't work for me. So then, you know, but, like, I'm still, you know, learning different things.
I kind of wanted to go back to this, actually, because this is something that you and I have in common. You said you suffered from panic attacks. When was your first panic attack that you remember?
Probably in school. Just being overwhelmed by, like, you know, being bullied and the schoolwork. I don't have a specific mm-hmm. for that, but yeah, it was just basically like I couldn't stop crying.
Okay.
And I just don't have any, as far as, like, my first one goes, I don't have any specifics, but I mean, that's usually what happens when I have a panic attack, is that I just can't stop crying.
And what do those look like for you now?
It's still the same. It's just it was more like, you know, I have somebody to turn to.
Mm-hmm. Is that the, and I guess I feel like a lot of people don't understand, like, panic attacks can happen in, you know, different forms. A lot of people see them as just being, you know, hyperventilating or it can be different for everybody.
Emotionally, that's where it goes to. If I'm actually having, with balloons, it's like, I will hyperventilate because it's like, okay. Like, does anybody else have it? Like, is in the lunchroom when people would pop their chip bags, it's like, is this going to happen again? Did the teacher see this? And then with cattle, it's just like, I can't function at all because this is a big phobia for me. Mm-hmm. And being bullied about it, it's just like, I can't help but like hyperventilate.
Now, what is it?
Than I am.
What is it about the balloons and the popping that scares you?
It's just that, like, it's just unexpected.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just kind of like a big, loud surprise, and then it just triggers something in you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of freeze and then hyperventilate. And then with cattle, it's just more like, you know, are they going to escape from where they're confined to? Mm-hmm. Or it's like, you know, the noise that they're making, are they hungry? Are they... You know, are they angry? It's like, you know, is somebody around? Like, is there a ranch hand around to, like, you know, deal with their needs?
Yeah. No, I actually can totally understand that. It's not like it's a small animal. I mean, it weighs, you know, hundreds of pounds. It's not a tiny... I'm actually surprised more people aren't afraid of, cattle in general. They're huge.
And plus, like, heifers, so, like, some female calves, you know, heifers, they have horns, even though they're tiny. It's just that, like, you know, the fact that they have them, kind of like with deer, it's like the fact that they have them, it's just that, like, you know, they may seem like a docile animal, but if you provoke them enough, it's like those could kill you. And it's just that, like, they can get really, they can get really mean. So it's just more of like, can somebody attend to the animal so then it doesn't further provoke itself?
So I wanted to ask you this because I think this could help somebody that hasn't thought of this before, but how do you get yourself, or how do you cope with a panic attack? How do you calm yourself back down, or do you calm yourself back down? Do you find somebody to help you, or?
I find somebody to help me.
Okay.
If I can. Mm-hmm. So, Tuesday, I was trying to talk to somebody, you know, just trying to talk to my manager. Well, the manager came to me. It's just kind of like, you know, like, they weren't saying the right things, but they were trying to say, you know, just calm down, you know, collect yourself. And then I talked to my therapist. She put it in a way that I can, you know, easier swallow it. And then, like, you know, with balloons and stuff, it's just somebody has to reassure me that everything's okay. And then with cattle, I have to put in my earbuds and go on my phone or my iPod, which I already have Spirit saved to. And I just have to click on the icon for the movie and have it start.
Okay, I see. Yeah, I think that kind of stuff is really... beneficial to other people that, you know, haven't found their way to cope yet.
Yeah. It's like, just try to have a game plan, like, you know, and then write it down and put it in your wallet or something. So, like, you know, if somebody needs to, like, you know, help you, they have at least some sort of understanding of what they should do. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I think I might be putting that in my wallet sometime soon.
I think that's a good idea. And just kind of going off of that, do you have any advice for people who don't have panic attacks to maybe help somebody that needs it or that they see having one, or, you know?
Do not go into that situation as nervous as they are. You need to be calm and you need to be understanding and just try to, you know, just calm them down if you can. If you can't, you know, make sure that that you contact somebody who can. So if they give you a paper and, you know, you can't calm them down specifically, but, you know, there's a contact on that paper where they say call, you know, mom or somebody, you know, just explain, hey, you know, so-and-so is having a panic attack and it's pretty severe. Can you help me calm them down?
That's amazing advice. That is incredible advice. Because I found that at times when I've had one, that would have helped me quite a bit if the people stayed calm with me. And I guess I'll add to this a little bit because this does help me. And I don't know how much this will help someone else, but I've found that breathing in and out as deeply and slowly as I can and feeling my pulse while I'm doing that for some reason or another always seems to work.
Yeah, deep breathing is really good. My friend just taught me how to meditate, and he's still going to teach me. Meditation is something new.
How do you like that? Do you find that really benefits you a lot? Because I like meditation myself.
Yeah, it's beneficial because it gives me that warm feeling, and he kind of tailors it to, you know, the person's specific needs. So, like, for me, it's but like, he's like, I noticed, he's like, from what you told me, you have, like, you know, a lot of symbolism with horses. So, I mean, like, you can feel that horse, that energy, it can calm you down. And you're right. When I feel it, it's just, I don't feel panicked. I don't feel like saying anything that I shouldn't say. I feel more at ease and harmonized with the world.
So, I know we didn't talk about this a lot. And I think that we should, because I think you would love this, because it's one of your passions, but we didn't talk about singing very much. We talked about acting and entertainment, but not about singing. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Singing is just like, it's just a way to like tell a story. It doesn't even have to be a real story, like, you know, with Jolene or something like that. Mm-hmm. It could just be something, like, completely silly with, like, you know, a lot of the kids' nursery songs. There's no set limitation to songs.
What's your earliest memory of singing that you have?
Barney.
Really? Okay. Tell me about that.
Yeah. All the Barney videos and all the Disney sing-along song videos. It's just because it's like, it's inviting and it's warm and welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just kind of feels like nothing matters when you're singing like little kid songs. But then with like songs for Broadway and movies, it's just that, like, you know, you have a specific character in mind. It's just that, like, you know, you're feeling a certain way and you got to bring it out in that way, not necessarily just like the person in who's portraying it on like on Broadway or in the TV or movie setting, but just in a way that kind of feels connected to the scene or the situation.
Is there a favorite, I don't want to say a song because I think that's too easy of a question, but maybe like a favorite genre or something you think you're best at to sing?
Oh, it's a lot of musical theater.
Okay.
A lot of musical theater.
So that's your expertise.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind singing, you know, like Selena Quintanilla songs. Cause, mm-hmm. You know, it helps with my Spanish.
Okay.
But a lot of it is just more like Broadway because, like I said, I grew up watching, you know, not only the Barney and the Disney movies, it's like I grew up watching Annie, Phantom, Les Mis, you know, Beauty and the Beast. Even though that is Disney, I mean, like, it is a very successful Broadway musical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something that, you know, makes me happy. Like, you know, Into the Woods has all of our favorite fairy tale characters all into one. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the new Beetlejuice musical because that's my favorite cartoon right now. I'm catching up on the old cartoons. I love the old Beetlejuice cartoon. I love the movie too.
I'm with you. I love both of those as well. I used to watch that as a kid and I've seen the movie, I don't know how many times, but it's one of the best movies. Would you say you're a generally happy person?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I get that from you a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I got to say, before, you know, we end this, I want to tell you that you've taught me a lot just in this short conversation. You've taught me how to listen, I think. You know, I really liked what you said about listening. And I think you've taught everybody listening that there's a different side to every story. You know, everybody has a story to tell, like you're saying, and that's kind of what this podcast is all about, you know? And I think you embody that. And I just really appreciate you sharing that with us and just allowing me to speak with you for, you know, an hour. I think that you have a lot to say and a lot of relevant and important things to say. And I'm glad that you felt comfortable enough to say them here.
Yeah. Because, like, I did two other podcasts before, and I think it's because it's in a more structured kind of way, because I'm not, you know, going all willy-nilly on a Word document. It's in a more structured kind of way.
Okay, so you feel that podcasts kind of give you that opportunity, and you can put your thoughts together easier.
Yes, okay. I do.
Well, I'm glad that you feel that way, because I really enjoyed our time together.
I did too.
And I think you said a lot of things that are going to be very helpful to a lot of people. And especially those that don't understand, I think they'll be very helpful to them.
Yeah, I think that's something that I would really, really hope that people grab from this podcast. It's just that, like, everybody should have a chance to say something. It's just that, like, you need to listen to where they come from, like, their point of view. So then, you know, it's something that I'm working on, and it's something that people should work on too, because there's a lot of negativity in the world, and there should be a lot more passion, because right now the word community kind of makes me cringe. But until, you know, people actually start showing a little more compassion, maybe that feeling of cringe can, you know, lessen.
You are a very intelligent and inspiring human.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on and for being so open and so thoughtful. I appreciate that.
And I appreciate you opening some time for that.
Of course, anytime. You know, I'm sure we will do this again. I would love to have you on again and talk a little bit more about anything.
Yes.
I had a great time.
I did too, and I look forward to doing it again.
Well, thank you again, Journey. You were incredibly insightful.
Thank you. And I really hope that people take something away from this. If not, they at least had something, you know, to at least just listen to.
I think they will. I think people will take something from this. Absolutely. I think you've really opened a lot of eyes, mine included. And you know, I learned a lot from you. So I think that's not something you'll have to worry about.
All right.
But thank you again, Journey. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good holiday.
You too.
Okay, bye.